Welcome to the Gaming Gang Extra, Phoenix Comic Con 2013 with Joshua Dicehart from Valiant Comics, direct from the convention floor. As per usual, I'm your host, Jeff McAleer. I'll be the first to point out I was pretty ignorant of all the goodness cooking with the relaunch of Valiant Comics just over a year ago. And although I didn't have an opportunity to educate myself with the company at C2E2 this year, of course I remember the old Jim Shooter Valiant quite well. But anyway, I was determined to correct my error at Phoenix Comic Con. Following the Valiant Comic panel yesterday, I had the chance to sit down and chat with writer Joshua Dicehart. Comic fans out there are no doubt familiar with Joshua's work, from such diverse titles as Violent Messiahs, Swamp Thing, The Unknown Soldier, just to name a few, as well as his current run on Harbinger and Harbinger Wars for Valiant. Like I said, I was pretty much in the dark, but have to say after checking out the Phoenix panel and chatting with Joshua, I'm super pumped to get my hands on what I've missed from Valiant, and I hope you will be too. Here from the floor of the Phoenix Comic Con, I'm sitting down with Joshua Dicehart from Valiant Comics, and I've already recorded the panel that you had earlier, and I was a little afraid to sit down and talk with you, number one, because of all that really foul adult language you used during the panel.
And also because I'm so handsome.
That wasn't it. The other thing was your weird fascination with goats. I don't know. But people will find out about that when they watch the panel when we put that up. But I want to say thanks a lot for spending some time talking with me today. And first thing I want to ask is Valiant's back.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, it's crazy. We're cresting into our second year now. Yeah, Valiant's back. A gentleman by the name of Dinesh, just the one name, like Sting or Cher. That's not true, but a gentleman by the name of Dinesh was a huge Valiant fan for years and years and years. He grew up in China, and there were some of the only comic books that he could get. And several years ago, he began the process of trying to get all the rights back for all the various properties, which he succeeded for doing for most of them. And we began our publishing program a little over a year ago with him in charge. Warren Simons is the editor. I'm one of the many freelancers they brought in to help build the universe out. And we've been really well received. Won several awards for Best New Publisher last year and just kind of going gangbusters.
Now, I understand you're the writer for Harbinger as well as Harbinger Wars. And as far as what I've been able to see, IGN, Comic Vine, Ain't It Cool News, they've said avoid these books like the plague, am I right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, just the opposite. It's been pretty unanimous, actually, the praise, and that's been really heartwarming because we're sort of living in an era of reboots right now, and however you feel about that, if you think the world needs another 90s publisher to be resurrected from the ashes, I certainly would understand your objections to that, but it's really nice that in this culture of reboot, we seem to have figured out a way to do it that is both fresh but honors what was good about what came before. And I don't know if every company can say that about their reboots. So yeah, we've been justly praised, I think, in the media for it.
Didn't believe Diamond Distributors call you the comic? Yeah.
Yeah, Publisher of the Year. Yeah, from, you know, Diamond Distributor. That, they know how to work with publishers, I guess.
I think they know comics somewhat.
I mean, I'm not going to say anything bad about Diamond. For all kinds of reasons.
Obviously enough. There aren't too many distributors left out there, so.
Exactly.
How did you get involved with Valiant?
Warren Simons cold called me. I had never worked with him. He's our group editor, and he's the one who really put together the various creative teams and, you know, and sort of guided us on our interpretations of these properties. And he had read Unknown Soldier, which is a book I did for Vertigo a few years back, and really liked it. And a friend of mine, Christos Gage, had also recommended me, so he was kind of being attacked on all fronts. So very early on, in fact, called me up and told me which properties were still available, which were all of them but one at that time. And I pitched for a whole bunch of them. I essentially pitched for every property, and he narrowed in on my pitch for Harbinger, and that's how we got the ball rolling.
Let's talk a little bit about Harbinger, because that is a classic Valiant title. In fact, memory serves, I think that was the first title they launched with back in the day.
Yeah.
Might be wrong, but so tell us a little bit about Harbinger itself. We'll move on to Harbinger Wars in just a minute.
Sure. Yeah, Harbinger is essentially a book about a couple of teenagers who have extraordinary powers and very limited sense of responsibility in how to use them.
Like me.
Precisely. Like, yeah. And we don't have the excuse of age. I'm just exactly. a 40-year-old man-child. It's, yeah. you know, that's pretty typical stuff, you know, for comics these days, is the kind of youthful hero. I think what's interesting and different about us is that our book is also about a generation gap. The most powerful person in the world, the most powerful super being in the world, owns the largest conglomerate corporation. And his name is Toyo Harada. He owns Harada Global Conglomerates. And he's essentially moving towards global domination. He's a utopian, but a sort of a utopian at all costs. And he has everything. He's the man who has everything. And there's a couple of kids out there who have nothing but their own powers, and they're about to rise up against him. And so in a way, it's about generational divides. It's about the haves and the have-nots. And in a lot of ways, it's about two philosophies colliding. There's not any real villainy in our book, though some people are better than others. Sure. But really what it is Toyo Harada, who runs this conglomerate, is sort of a dictator with noble intentions, whereas Peter, who runs this group of kids, is philosophically populist, democratic. And so what we're really seeing here is a struggle between sort of a utopian dictatorial vision and a democratic vision. And as messy as democracy is, and I'm always fascinated by how messy democracy is, you can never achieve a utopia with democracy. However, democracy is the only ethical way to function. And so hopefully we're taking those themes and we're exploring them using superheroes and using the haves versus the have-nots and all these other, and the generational themes I mentioned.
And then we have Harbinger Wars,
right.
which also includes some other titles such as Bloodshot, right?
That's right. So there was another book called Bloodshot that was very capably being written by Dwayne Swierczynski, and several amazing artists were on that book. And Bloodshot was very much thematically about the search for free will. It was about a programmable soldier who was an organism, but also had nanites in his system, in the loosest sense, kind of a cybernetic soldier. And near the beginning of his run, he's deprogrammed and set off, and he believes that he's operating under free will for most of his series. We later find out in Harbinger Wars that maybe he'd overestimated his own free will. So that's what that book is about, thematically. And then you have our book about kids and corporations and generational divides and superheroes. And when these books collided, they were on a natural course that we literally seeded in page one of Bloodshot, the very first issue. When that arc came to its conclusion after 1 year, these two books collided and they created a third miniseries called Harbinger Wars. And in Harbinger Wars, two elements create this third, which is a whole group of new superpowered kids sort of are hemorrhaged out into the world all of a sudden. And they're an extremely dangerous variable and everyone's sort of fighting for them. So the two books have been on an arc for a year, a collision arc, and Harbinger Wars is the explosion of that collision.
And once again, this is another situation where there is no clear-cut, mustache-twirling villain.
Yeah, I often quote Ursula K. Le Guin. She famously said villainy is boring, and couldn't agree with her more.
Dick Dastardly is a great character. I wish someone would just, you know, do a crossover in some comic with him. Yeah. Just fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. I could actually write the hell out of that, let me just say.
Gotta get Muttley in there, though.
Yeah. You know, obviously, there's an organization named Rising Spirit Securities, also known as Project Rising Spirit. And, you know, and they are possibly the most immoral group in our entire universe. The entire organization is systemically pathological. You know, they do things on a whim. They're obsessed with technology. They almost always do the wrong thing and then try to cover it up with an even worse wrong thing.
Microsoft.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I like Microsoft.
We could attribute them with villainy, right? Because certainly, you know, they cause suffering in the world and everything. And that's about the closest we get. But I have noticed the one complaint, the one bad review we've got from Harbinger Wars, which actually brought a huge smile to my face, was this guy said, I don't know who I'm supposed to be rooting for. Who's the bad guy here? Everybody seems to want something good, but they're all end up fighting. To me, that was exactly our intention. This is the nature of power. Like, power abhors other power. And so no matter if you've got two good intentions, these intentions are going to clash. I like the idea that it's possible to make a big summer crossover event like DC or Marvel does, but have at its core something really thematically interesting, which, you know, arguably, I don't think they have for a while. I thought Civil War had a very fascinating theme at its core, you know, and I think there should just be more of that in comics. I mean, I write from a place of theme, and I think Harbinger Wars has an interesting theme.
And I would take a guess that probably to follow up on a crossover like that, it gives you much more material to mine than, say, something that's just so completely cut and dry, like an Infinite Crisis. And I loved Civil War, too, but then in the end, I thought Marvel kind of dropped the ball on that.
It's not even really their fault because of the nature of the properties they have and because the popularity of those properties and the market share that they control. If they don't return it to the status quo, you know, we can complain about them not doing that, but the fact is that's where they get their bread and butter. We're in a very unique position, and it doesn't make us better than Marvel or worse, but we're in a position where if we do return to the status quo, we're not going to survive in the marketplace. If we're going to in any way find a niche for ourselves alongside a DC or Marvel, which is infinitely larger than us, let's not forget, Marvel is Disney, DC yes. is Warner Brothers, yes. we're just Valiant. So in any way to carve out any sort of market share with them, we have to be different. We have to be extreme. We have to make interesting creative decisions that they can't make because of their size, because of their market share. I'm not saying that's better or worse, but it does put us in a unique position, and it excites me as a writer, because now I'm at a publisher where if Harbinger Wars doesn't change our universe, then we're in trouble, right? Then we're operating just like DC and Marvel, and I love that. No matter how conservative our administration at Valiant would be, and they're not, but if they were, they'd still know that in their best interest is to do interesting comics that affect real change in the shared universe. Otherwise, you know, we're just not going to be able to compete.
So are you implying that Dr. Octopus is not going to continue to be Spider-Man?
I am not inside the House of M. I make no...
House of Ideas?
Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah, right. I have no... the House of Ideas. I have no idea what they're planning. I would be shocked if... 3 years from now, 2 years from now, a year from now, he's still Spider-Man, yeah.
This is the second coming of the Summer of Valiant.
Yes.
So there are some new titles that are approaching, and I believe you might be working on some of them, maybe you're not.
I am. I'm working on one of them. I'm not taking the lead on it. Christos Gage will be taking the lead on the book Bloodshot and the Hardcore. So basically what's going to happen, without giving out too much away about how Harbinger Wars ends, is that our book Bloodshot will be forever altered by the events in Harbinger Wars, and in a new group, which is an old group from the old Valiant days, Hardcore is going to be introduced, and there'll be a new dynamic in that book for about a year. So I'm co-writing that with Christos Gage. So that's going to be lovely. I've always wanted to work with Christos. I think he's a great writer. He's definitely taking the lead on this, and I'm just kind of there to make sure everything gels with the universe, and you know, we keep it interesting and keep it linked in. So that's a really interesting position for me to be in. I've never been like that before, writing with someone, and particularly being the secondary writer. Mm-hmm. Usually a proprietary jerk.
Sure.
So that's really interesting. But yeah, there's other books. There's Eternal Warrior is finally hitting this month, and Quantum and... I'm not this month. I'm sorry, this summer. Mm-hmm. And Quantum and Woody, which is going to be great. James Asmus is writing it. He's really funny. Tom Fowler is drawing it. He's amazing. So the second Summer of Valiant's coming. Year two, baby. Yeah.
I believe Quantum and Woody has a lot of goat action in it, too.
There's some goat action in it. I'm not writing the book, again. Much like I can't speak for Marvel, I can't speak for James and Tom. Quantum and Woody, but there's definitely going to be a goat in it, and we're all super excited about the goat.
At least we know it's in issue one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is the goat in issue one? I don't know.
I think that's what we saw at the panel.
The goat's coming. That's kind of the promotional headline for Valiant's second summer, is the goat is coming.
The goat is coming.
The entire year,
based on that.
Don't read too...
The year of the goat.
The year of the goat. Don't read too much into the goat is coming, but it's coming.
Now we've got listeners out there, we've got people who have seen the panel, and now they're pumped, and they're like, wow, you know, I want to grab Valiant, and I want to check out these series. I don't really necessarily want to go collect some back issues and that. I mean, would there be graphic novels that are out there that these folks can pick up?
Oh, yeah. All of our first story arcs from all of our books are now collected. I know that my book has a second collection out. Because I'm a solipsistic, self-absorbed jerk, I don't know if the other books have second trades out yet. But obviously, you know, yeah, the whole first year is collected at this point, or at least the first story arcs. And that's a great jumping on point. Also, if you want to, you know, invest less and just see what you like, we've done dollar issues for all of number ones. You can purchase them for a dollar at your LCS. So you can literally buy all six of the first titles for $6. See if one, two, three, all of them fit your aesthetic, and you can pursue that title, yeah.
Plus, there's quite a few Zero issues that are out there as well. And some are actually premiering in the midst of arcs, but they're also a good way to introduce people as well, am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know, one of the ways in which we plan on surviving is making sure that every new story arc is a jumping on point. One of the things this industry has a tendency of doing is creating sort of a narrative citadel, and it's hard for people to get into. And we understand that we really can't do that if we're going to survive. But having said that, the Zero Issue is obviously always a great place to jump on board and see what a book feels like, how it is. Now we've got a Zero Bloodshot coming, which is written by the amazing Matt Kent, who's, I think, a genius. Does mind management and three story. I'm a little intimidated about him coming in and writing, honestly. I did a Zero Harbinger that can be read either independently to give you a feel for Harbinger, or can be read right in the midst of the series and makes you feel like you know even more about what's going on. There's a Zero Shadow Man, which is amazing. An amazing read. Justin Jordan knocked that one out of the park.
I know Archer and Armstrong. There's a Zero issue for that.
Issue of Archer and Armstrong coming, which looks amazing. Has dinosaurs in it. I mean, do I need to tell you anything else? Dinosaurs.
Last thing I want to ask about Joshua, and we had chatted a little bit before we sat down, and I explained that the main focus of TGG is tabletop gaming. And you revealed something pretty interesting, I thought, about how you got into writing. What inspired you to write?
I think one of the most difficult things in this world for a kid to do is to feel creatively empowered, unless they have creative parents and they see that it's a job all around them. I am of a generation that was the first generation of RPGers, of pen and paper role-playing gamers. And I was an only child to a single parent, a single female parent. She worked all the time. We didn't have a lot of money. And so the best my mom could do would buy me the initial system. I could never buy modules. I couldn't buy, you know, monster manuals. And so what I had to do was I spent hours and hours and hours of almost virtually all my adolescent life sitting alone in my room building campaigns for my friends to play. And unquestionably, that is what creatively empowered me and taught me how to tell stories and how to entertain people. And I would definitely not be the writer that I am today if it wasn't for RPG pen and paper games. And it was such an incredible time, too. You and I were talking a little bit about that, about the early 80s explosion in RPGs and the ensuing sort of paranoia that came around D&D.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's such a fascinating time. And I recall I was the game master for my entire school, and I recall being called into the principal to sort of defend this, or they were going to make it outlawed in the schools. We couldn't play anymore.
Why did you take the kids down in the steam tunnels? That's what I don't understand.
You know, right? Yeah, just come back, just me come back alone. Yeah, they would have loved that.
They missed their saving throw. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But I will never forget, it was really fascinating, and I sat down with the principal, and to his credit, this is a small independent school district in Texas, South Texas, where I grew up, and to his credit, once he realized that essentially it was a bunch of kids using statistics and math and stuff to approximate a new reality, he thought it was the greatest thing he ever heard of. He couldn't believe that. Right. That he had his kids were all sitting around trying to figure out their stats, you know, and I sort of saved the day for the school in role-playing games, and that was my first act of activism. Now I'm a very politically active person, and unquestionably my first act of storytelling was creating these adventures for these kids. I'm also a video gamer, and I'm also one of the first generation of video gamers. My mother brought home Pong. My mom would do anything to keep me occupied while she had to go to work. Yeah. You know, so at the risk of betraying a medium that I adore, which is video games, I am a little concerned that they sort of give the consumer sort of everything. And you know, when we sat down to play pen and paper games, we gave everything to it. It was a social experience. It was a creative experience. It was a collectively creative experience. As amazing as video games are, it's still an elite group of people providing you entertainment. The other games forced us to entertain each other. And I wouldn't be here today, and I live an amazing life. I mean, I wake up whenever I want. I make crap up for a living.
Sure.
You know, it's incredible. But it all starts with the role-playing games, man. You know, I know that culture is still out there, and I'd love to see more young people doing it.
Oh, they're out there.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I can't advocate for it enough. I mean, it was literally one of the best things in my life. Now that I look back on it, not realizing it at the time, but
sure.
And I was also an awkward kid, you know, and I just didn't...
What do you mean, kid? You're awkward now.
Yeah, exactly. Could you only imagine? But seriously, but, you know, those games really provide a platform for awkward people to sort of come together, you know?
Not even awkward. People who want to be creative, and I thought it was interesting you just brought that up about video games. I love video games, too,
yeah.
But when I have a social environment, I'm not busting out the video game because it's not the same kind of interaction. You know, okay, here's the controller. It's your turn now.
Yeah, that's right.
No, tabletop games... there's joking and imagination and everything else, no matter what people are playing.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. And it's, yeah, you're right, it's not just the RPGs. I mean, the beautiful thing about a board game is it demands imagination. It demands it. And I just adore that, and I love that that culture still exists. We do seem to be in a kind of a renaissance of that whole thing happening. I'm seeing very, very large companies invest in properties that were super important to me when I was a kid, and I just think that's lovely. I think that's just the best way to engage kids, you know, apply game theory to imagination, and you're going to get a fascinating adult in 20 years. Yeah.
Last question I would ask you, Joshua, is for the uninitiated out there regarding Valiant, what is one thing that you would say to someone who came up to your booth right now and said, why should I buy a Valiant comic?
Well, I'm going to end up pitching my own comic, which I did mention earlier, I'm solipsistic and self-absorbed. But I would say you should read Harbinger. You know what? No, let's not be self-absorbing and solipsistic. I think the reason to read Valiant is that we have a book for everyone. No matter what you're into, we've got a book for you. If you like epic science fiction, we've got XO. If you want humanist superheroes, which I think is something that is really lacking actually right now in the industry, you've got my book, Harbinger. My book has a superhero team that is more women than men. It's the only superhero team in comics right now, more women than men. If you want horror, we have Shadow Man. If you want action, we've got Bloodshot. If you want comedy, we have Archer and Armstrong. You know, we're able to curate our lines specifically so that we meet every reader's needs in a way that a DC or a Marvel, which are sort of built on the quicksand of history, 60 years or whatever it is of history, they can't necessarily do, you know? So we're fast, we're nimble, we're smart, we hire, like, the best creatives and we let them do what they want to do, and I think it makes for a dynamic, young, fresh-feeling company. So if you feel you like to read some comic books that feel a little freshly baked instead of a little stale, I think we got the comics for you.
Wonderful. Joshua Dysart, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with me here at Phoenix Comic Con.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for the time, man.
There you have it. Once again, a big thanks to Joshua Dysart for taking time to chat, and be sure to not only check out his Valiant work, but also his other titles as well. Stay tuned for our next extra, and until then, be sure to visit thegaminggang.com.